Welcome to the Odds Breakers, number one place for shared, sharp betting information.
Welcome back to Podcast 32 of 2024. I'm your host, Kiev O'Neill. You can follow me on Twitter at OBKiev. Follow us at the Odds Breakers. Follow us on social media /the Odds Breakers. This episode is brought to you by BetMGM for an up to $1,500 bonus, especially in North Carolina. Please visit this podcast description. Click on the link. Terms, conditions, and location apply. If you'd like to support the Odds Breakers and benefit from our premium plays, please visit theoddsbreakers.com. Click on Become a Member. Pick any of our winning cappers to get their premium plays before the line moves. You can also get our insider membership at only $50 to get all our plays. And if nothing else, please visit the Odds Breakers and become a free picks and Telegram subscriber. NFL draft week continues, my friends, and lots of people digging for information, lots of BS out there too. Yeah, silly movements in the lines based upon pure conjecture. You know, everyone's just dying for information, dying to be the first to release it. Obviously, mistakes are made and there's misinformation in the marketplace based upon some of these teams that want to get their guy. You're kind of seeing a lot of it, and I've discussed it on our Monday podcast, a little bit about the smokescreen, and I still believe McCarthy might be a smokescreen in this draft, but our wonderful guest, Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros, is coming on to break down the draft and tell us a little bit more about his thoughts on J.J. McCarthy as well as his draft board and how he sees this draft lining up. So always great to get more perspectives on the draft. We plan on doing that today as well as tomorrow with another wonderful guest. So we're going to get into some of our thoughts and hopefully find some line value for you when this podcast is released. So without further ado, let's get right into this NFL draft and our wonderful guest from Betting Pros, Mr. Thor Nystrom. All right, now I'm pleased to welcome for the first time to the Odds Breakers an NFL draft and college football specialist and Mr. Thor Nystrom from Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros. You can follow Thor on X at ThorKU. Thor, first of all, man, your first name's awesome. I love how unique it is. I share a unique first name myself. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Kia. Appreciate it. Yeah, and I appreciate my first name too, because it's one way that people remember you. You know, I mean, like the reason I got it, it's funny. You know, I am from northern Minnesota. In fact, for people out there, I'm from Brainerd, Minnesota, which people can recall if you have seen the movie Fargo, which is actually based not in Fargo but in Brainerd, Minnesota. Yeah. The Coen brothers spent a lot of time in northern Minnesota. That's where people with my, they say I got an accent. To me, I don't got an accent. Everyone else does, but that's where it comes from if you think that I have one of those. But my father, when he was in kindergarten, his name is Bob or Robert, and there was like six other Bobs. And so one of them was like a Rob, one became Robbie, Robert, Bob, Bobby, and whatever. I think he drew the Robbie stick, and that's what he was through high school, and he absolutely hated it. So he was like, my son, I'm naming him something that name that no one else has. And then being the northern Minnesota thing, and of course, I am Swedish and German and Norwegian in my back. So because of all those different reasons, became Thor. And luckily, I am 6 feet and over 200 pounds. If I was 5'5" and very, very small, I don't think that I'd like the name as much, but I'll take it.
You're a big boy, so it fits you. That's perfect. Awesome, powerful name. You know, and my first question was how you got your first name. You kind of, I mean, what's funny is like I'm constantly answering this, and the story is very boring. It's dull as hell. I have to lie and say my parents were drunk in the 70s playing darts while pregnant, and she missed the dartboard and hit the world map and landed on Kiev. That's what that's what the fake story is. But you know, I'm asked that constantly, and you know, you kind of answered. You know, he's just sick of a unique name. My dad was James, you know, and I think to myself, the amount of times I've been called on a loudspeaker, even starting back from school, wrong, Kiev, Kiev, Kiva. You think it's like, geez, man, I've been much more beneficial if I was Michael sometimes. But hey, it also works for you too, because people do remember you, like you said, Thor.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And especially in, you know, in undergrad, you go to, I went to University of Kansas. There's a ton of people on campus and you know, you class and then in the passing, you know, whatever, and then parties and stuff. And like people tend to remember when your name is Thor, because it's the first time they ever met someone like that. But then it turned out to be a good thing, because I had to get better at remembering people's faces and then their names. But yeah, like, because a lot of times you get the, hey, Thor, and then it'd be like, hey, you know, like up until it's like, Thor, we have to get better at that skill.
Absolutely. That is so interesting. And you guys just stole Pryor from us in Wisconsin over in Kansas there. So congrats to that little pickup here in the transfer portal. I think the dust hasn't settled, but he was our best player. So, but hey, I don't fault the kid for going to get paid $1 million at Kansas or whatever it was, 750 to $1 million, because, you know, that's what you got to do these days. You know, especially if there's not a big NBA future. But as things go, kids are going to get paid more to more. But we have a big NFL draft to discuss. And man, I've listened to some of your stuff on VSiN and some of your interviews, and there's some disagreement and some agreement, and I'm excited to talk about it with you. But why don't you start with who your top like six or seven quarterbacks are entering this draft, not from where they're going to be drafted, just from what you think they are as prospects.
Yeah, the top six on my board, and this has been from back in late January, and people can check the receipts on that. I haven't changed on this at all. These are also my top three overall players: Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy. So that's 1, 2, 3 on both boards. Then Drake May, I have QB4. I believe he is number 8 overall on my 500 player board, which has 500 comps. People can see that at fantasypros.com/Thor500. He might QB4. And then my QB5 is Michael Penix. I have an early second round on him. Wouldn't argue till I was blue in the face if a team takes him late first. Think you're reaching, you go above that. My QB6 is Spencer Rattler. Who I'd be okay with the team taking anytime in the mid third round, you know, around there, even a little bit earlier than that, but somewhere in that third round range. And then my QB7 is Bo Nix, and I have a late third round on Bo Nix.
Wow. Okay. So that's fine. And I want to go, I'm the way I do it is I'm also different than a lot of consensus, you know. It worked for me last year, 'cause I did have CJ Stroud at number one. But, you good know, call. Maybe, thank you. This could be my year that I completely blow it, though. So we have the biggest disagreement on McCarthy, I think. And what's funny is that I look at him one way, and maybe you're looking at him another way. But I have, you know, the first two, the consensus, 1, Caleb Williams, 2, Jaden Daniels, by a sliver. I think there's issues with Williams and Daniels, to be truthful. But I have Michael Penix, 3. And then, you know, I just saw what he did. And I feel that Washington, the reason they went to the playoffs was more because of Michael Penix, and the reason they got past Texas. 4, I have Bo Nix. 5, believe it or not, I have Sam Hartman. And I just, I know, but we probably have some disagreement there. And we can talk Spencer Rattler or Sam Hartman when everybody else doesn't have neither of them there. But I just really like what I saw, not only at Wake Forest, but, he did pretty good at Notre Dame, 10 wins. And maybe they didn't win because of him. And that's something we can talk about. I have Drake May as 6. But 7, I have J.J. McCarthy. And my thing for him is that his numbers were really good, but don't you kind of think that they won not because of him, but he was more of a manager in those situations, 10 for 18 in the final game, 140 yards?
No, I don't. I think the narrative gets a little bit inverted with JJ, you know, the thought that he got carried there and any other guy would have done the same thing. People forget when JJ McCarthy arrived at Michigan, it was to a 2-4 Michigan Wolverine team. Of course, that was the COVID season that was so bad the year before he got there that people wanted Jim Harbaugh fired. J.J. McCarthy had committed to that team over essentially every other team in the nation. His high school recruiting was he won a state title in Illinois as a sophomore. As a junior, was got to the title game again. They lost in the championship. But then as a senior, that was the COVID season. They canceled his season with that Illinois school that he was at. So he had to go to IMG in Florida. They won the state title again, but that team was also the consensus national champion. So if you want to say it like that. But anyway, all the blue bloods were, of course, everyone was after J.J. McCarthy. He commits to Michigan despite the situation that was going on there. And not only held on to that commitment, stayed true to that commitment through the whole thing, he helped Harbaugh recruit in what became this awesome recruiting class that season, you know, heading into that 2021 season, which then became the bedrock for the thing that ended up turning Michigan quickly from that dumpster fire situation into a colossus.
Sure.
J.J. McCarthy was playing that first season, not all the time, but he was clearly better than Cade McNamara. Yeah, so sorry about that with the internet blip there, but he displaces Cade McNamara, and that I think we were with the true sophomore season. J.J. McCarthy takes over, they make the college football playoff again, and then this past season, of course, is the 20-year-old true junior. That's where Michigan ends up winning the national title, and down the stretch there, J.J. was nearly flawless against this murderer's row procession of defenses. Alabama, of course, was the semifinal game, but prior to that, you had Penn State, Ohio State. Iowa had the nasty defense in the Big Ten title game. And then in the championship game was against Washington. Now, they didn't need him as much in, for instance, the Washington game as they did against Alabama and coming back from that double-digit deficit in the second half, because Washington's defense, their run defense, is horrific. So, that of course, that was the thing that you were going to lean into in the pregame game plan with that. They didn't need J.J. as much. But the thing with J.J., I forgot if I made this point before my internet blipped out or not, but the Michigan offense needed J.J. a lot more than the other way around. The way that it was designed was the run, then they would get into all these third and medium and third and long scenarios, more so than the other top six guys, just by the numbers. And J.J., of course, qualitatively, I think most people on draft Twitter have seen the stats on this ad nauseum, was better in those situations than any of the other top guys. That's what NFL evaluators care about. When they're looking at cut-ups, if they could only look at one cut-up of a kid, a lot of them would answer to you, the one I want to look at is the cut-up of the kid, third and medium, third and long, because the defense knows what's coming. They want to know who in those situations can win, as opposed to who is best at throwing the pre-delineated screen pass to the outside. Bo Nix might be the best at that, but that wasn't a tenet of Michigan's offense, which is why J.J. McCarthy didn't get as many of those empty calorie stats. But what J.J. was good at was those high leverage situations against the best defenses, played the 38th average defensive strength, like I was mentioning, and beat those NFL defenders with NFL style concepts, the 12 personnel Jim Harbaugh offense, on the highest stage possible in going to the national title game. So I think with all that stuff, and then the athletic traits, sixth best three cone at the NFL combine, irregardless of position, at 17 pounds heavier than the Michigan bio, check the size concerns, the arm strength, 61 mile per hour max velo throw at the NFL combine was one beneath the record that Josh Allen had before, was tied by Joe Milton. You have all that, and then those things working in conjunction on the field with the guy who is one of the better creators that we have in this class, as far as getting out of the pocket, off platform, off script. Last year, 72% and change for J.J. McCarthy, just in the aggregate with his completion percentage. He was number 5 in on-target rate as well, but 71% on the move when he was scrambling, which is pretty unheard of, to keep almost all your accuracy while you're on the move. The reason for that, keeps the eyes downfield, keeps the upper body cocked to throw with that throwing platform under him always. So I think, he was undersold coming into the process, but obviously he's moved up as we've gone along.
I mean, you certainly make a great case, and wow, you had this down. Absolutely. but here's the thing, obviously he beat some of the best teams. Alabama didn't have to face Georgia, but, took care of business against Washington. But, I could argue that his stats are a little bit skewed because their non-conference was so easy and that Big Ten was trash except for the top two teams, Ohio State and Penn State, which he did play at least adequate to very good against those teams. But the one big thing that I'm still hanging on that really bugs me is I watch Jim Harbaugh, and I think Jim Harbaugh is even underrated today. You know, you find you say people want Jim Harbaugh fired. Well, people still want Jim Harbaugh fired. They're Ohio State fans, you know, because that's how good of a coach he was. But guess what? He leaves. He didn't have to be fired. And now he's on the Chargers, and I'd have to wonder what he's going to bring to the NFC, the AFC West. But I watched Colin Kaepernick, and I saw what Jim Harbaugh did with him and what he was with Jim Harbaugh. And I saw Colin Kaepernick without Jim Harbaugh, and it wasn't even like being in the league stats-wise, you know. And so I still have to think maybe some of J.J.'s success was just because he had the best coach around, you know. And so those are the two things I'm hung up on, Thor. And, I mean, you have to credit Harbaugh for some of this success, correct?
For sure. The only thing I push back on that is, and he did, obviously, Jim did an incredible job with Kaepernick, right? Like, that was a guy where I hope this isn't, like, too derisive, but Kaepernick, like, I'm just on the field, obviously, when you bring up his name, it evokes all this other stuff. But just on the field, like, he, you know, and coming out of Nevada, it was kind of like a homeless man's version of Jaden Daniels, right? Where it was like the thing he was good at was throwing down the field and then scrambling in you know, a tall kid who was skinny. But Kaepernick struggled with the other stuff way more than Jaden did. So it was like this skill set that was like heavily leaning on only these two things. And Harbaugh very cleverly schemed around that, and his offensive coordinator schemed around it. The one, and Harbaugh does that with players, irregardless of position. I think it's the thing that he gets undersold the most about, about, you know, let's tailor it to that. So thing I push back on is you could absolutely argue that that Jim did not, when he was at Stanford, he could have, I don't know how you want to put, because it's not a criticism. Like, he did awesome with the development of Andrew Luck at Stanford, but that he could have tried to wreck the Pac-12 a little bit more with Luck, of just like, let's have him be Khaleesi's dragon with that. And with Michigan last year, because, you know, you mentioned some of the strength, the schedule stuff, and you had Blake Corum was very good. And then you had McCarthy, who was very good in these high leverage efficiency type things. It was like, it was a clever construction, at least, of that collegiate offense. If your goal was to win the national title, there's that Milton Berle thing of like, he only pulled out what he needed to win the contest. That's JJ McCarthy. Every time he was pulled out, it was the trump card of we're winning this contest, to use sort of a crass metaphor with it.
For sure. I mean, a winner is a winner, and you gave some high school examples and everything. And you, like I said, you definitely have made great points, but let's look at the weird situations that at least I put myself in by putting Sam Hartman number 5, and you put in Spencer Rattler. Was it 5 or 6? You had him pretty high.
I had 6.
Okay. So I'm looking at Sam Hartman, 6'1", 4.840, you know, not big, definitely. I guess profile wise, he's smaller, but Spencer Rattler, 6 foot tall, 4.9540, you know, but at the same time, I think most of the mocks rankings out there lean more towards you. They have Sam Hartman below Spencer Rattler. Why don't you tell me why you like Spencer Rattler? I do know he didn't have much of an offensive line his last year at South Carolina.
For sure. Yeah, Rattler, when he came out, was the ballyhooed recruit and became the first guy for Lincoln Riley that he had handpicked guy that he had picked out of high school that went on to start for Lincoln Riley. At the beginning of the Oklahoma time with Riley, it was all the transfer guys, Hurts, Baker Mayfield, and Kyler. And Rattler became the first one out of high school. Rattler was awesome as a redshirt freshman there. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I think he was number 4 PFF grade overall in the FBS as a redshirt freshman. And he was particularly special outside the pocket and out of structure, which PFF at that time was evoking to the grading that they had done on Pat Mahomes at Texas Tech his last season. So people were drawing these parallels of Rattler as sort of a pint-sized Mahomes in terms of that area of his game, the creativity and stuff like that. And Rattler's game, it was it's not the quick hitting, you know, give me the read in advance stuff. That's not his game. His game, it is that creativity thing. Caleb Williams is the extreme example of this on the other end of the polarity. Of course, Caleb Williams is more athletic and has a bigger arm than Rattler, but it's the same sort of prerogative. Baker Mayfield is another guy like this. Kyler Murray be another guy like this. Bryce Young from the last class, stylistically very similar. But those guys sort of exist in this sort of same phylum. Reason I bring all this up is that worked very well, Oklahoma, that first year when – you know, of course, Rattler ends up getting displaced by Caleb Williams the next year. And then, Caleb and Riley leave. No shame in getting displaced by this, potential prodigy of a number one overall quarterback draft prospect. But then Rattler, then he transfers. The fit for his game at South Carolina was particularly bad. You brought up the offensive line. The last 2 years, South Carolina was outside the top 110 in PFF pass blocking grade. Both times that was problem one. Problem two was they played an SEC schedule both times. In addition to that, they play Clemson every year out of conference. Some of those SEC teams, they'll play at Cannes out of conference. South Carolina plays Clemson because of the rivalry thing. So mm-hmm. you're playing both the schedule there, the tough SEC fronts. Sure. And then you have to play the nasty Clemson fronts. So think of Spencer Rattler's game where he likes the field spread and he's the smaller pocket passer, very snappy arm, very creative kid, but he wants not the answer given to him in advance. He wants to make it while the bullets are flying, call it playground ball, call it whatever you want, but he has the vision downfield. He has the courage to work around bodies and be scrambling around. He doesn't care about the pressure. And then he can fire the ball off from these different angles and stuff like that. The problem is when you're playing behind such a rancid offensive line against all these awesome defensive fronts that they played, where the pressure is coming immediately from all different angles, how are you going to have a game where you're moving around and you try to extend the play past 3 seconds? That's these guys that have games like this in college, their average time to throw is generally around 3 seconds or above. Caleb Williams was 3.6, I think, during his Heisman season on the particularly high end. So what you saw the first season, particularly in the first 10 games of Spencer Rattler, is his entire game devolved because the coaching staff didn't make modifications for him and Spencer Rattler didn't make modifications on his end. The last couple games of that season, it's started to go the other way because Rattler started to make the adjustments that he needed to play behind this ramshackle offensive line that they had. He lights up Clemson, lights up Tennessee, lights up Notre Dame from my memory, the last three games of 2022. Then going into 2023, all of his skill friends left him, unfortunately, Marshawn Lloyd and Jaheim Bell, and then the NCAA had this weird ruling with Dante Miller, this kid who's kind of interesting, who popped at their pro day, who ended up signing with the Giants in a story that we don't have time to get into, but he was ruled ineligible right before the season. So South Carolina's running back room stunk. Their offensive line was still just as bad, and now they only had one wide receiver. They only had one pass catcher, Xavier Leggett. It was Xavier Leggett and Pray for Rain. But at least there were some modifications made to have the quicker passes and have some of the more timing concepts where it was like, get the snap and get the ball out quicker, which at least Spencer Rattler proved that he could do. And then he also has that other unique aspect of his game, which we already know from previous. If he gets behind a decent offensive line again, and now he has skill talent again, that's where I could see him potentially harken back to earlier in his career. And that's why I would be comfortable rolling the dice in the third round. Because I think at worst, you get the snappy pocket passing arm, in that little frame with a guy that knows what he's doing. It would be a solid QB2 in my opinion, but I also think there's a potential upside to have a guy that could be, the 16th best starter in the NFL for a while. And then who is the other guy that you had asked about during that? Hartman.
I guess just real quick, so we can get to the other question. What don't you like about Hartman, being that I don't think you probably even have him ranked, or at least not in your top 10, 15.
The thing I like about Sam Hartman is he is one of the most handsome men I've ever seen in person. The guy's dreamy. He was like, we were at the luncheon at the Senior Bowl. He was one of those guys where even like the guys at the ink stains were like, oh my gosh, like look at Sam Hartman. And then, everyone's like, a very good looking guy, Sam Hartman. He's going to get a job in the media very quickly after his playing career is done. It's like the Brady Quinn thing. So no one has to feel sorry for Sam Hartman as far as the on-field stuff goes. And the thing I like about the on-field stuff is he knows how to run a system. I'll say that. And he did it two different diametrically opposite ones in college, it's very difficult to run. Now, it's not translatable to the NFL, but it is not easy to run the Dave Clawson offense at Wake Forest called the Clawfence, which is this weird thing that he and his offensive coordinator invented with the slow mesh, which is cool. And if people haven't seen that before, go and check out Wake Forest offense. But basically, it's like RPO, but in slow-mo. And then, you know, so it's like at the mesh points, slow mesh. They allow the defenders to come a little bit closer into the kitchen, and then they see then if there's a running lane that develops because of this, a gap, or the quarterback can pull it, and if the defense had been too aggressive, you should have an opening really quick.
I mean, that makes sense. You don't want to rush your RPO. You know, you gotta get the guy open, the slant open, and then, or, you know, if the defensive end crashes, you gotta take off. I mean, that makes sense to me.
For sure. And he was very good at that at Wake Forest, and obviously the numbers speak for themselves with regards to that. And then he goes to Notre Dame and also put up good numbers in the Notre Dame offense. The things where I'm on the opposite side of it with, and I see him as a guy either gets picked late seventh or he's one of the top, gets one of the highest UDFA bonuses. That's where I'm sort of at with Hartman, where I would grade him. But it's, you're on the smaller end. He does not have a good arm. We saw that down in Mobile. We see this in the tape. He doesn't like throwing it downfield. He's not going to test any of those windows. He's a poor athlete. So you're confined to the pocket. Not a good arm, like I said. And then the other thing is he struggles when the pressure begins to get into his kitchen. And I think one of the reasons for that is he doesn't have the athleticism to escape it. And he doesn't have that arm to go to all the options in that moment. So you saw sort of his decision-making process sort of speed up and the vision constrict, and you saw problems with that, particularly at the end there at Notre Dame. Is he a guy that could hang on a roster for a while as a backup? For sure. And he could, to your point, he could be better than what I think as far as a guy that potentially could be the break glass in case of emergency and start games, you know, if there's a injury to the starter. But I see him more as the guy who's like a QB3 his first couple years, maybe even a practice squad. We'll have to see. But I think where people will hear Sam Hartman's name most going forward is from a television desk.
Spencer Rattler gets the nod for you by a long shot, and Sam Hartman, too good looking to be playing in the NFL, man. You know, maybe get a little extra bars on that face mask there.
So hot right now.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
That is hilarious. Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it all pans out, because there is a lot of talk about these quarterbacks going in the first round, how many are going to go. I saw that tweet about Pro Football Focus saying four of the top five 2021 quarterbacks that everyone's ranting and raving about picked in the draft have all been basically traded for nothing. Fourth rounder guys, Saturday guys, you know? And I find that just so interesting, because you had some big names there. You had like Mac Jones having a hell of a career, or finishing to his career at Alabama. I mean, if you look at his numbers and J.J. McCarthy's, it's a lot more. You know, he did more. He had to do more. Was he in a better system or a different system? Absolutely. But, you know, it's just so interesting to see these top guys that were, you know, Trey Lance, you know, Zach Wilson just gets traded, get traded in these situations. Justin Fields, you know. And they became nothing almost, you know, and I think, was it Trevor, who was the first pick of the draft? Was it Trevor
Lawrence?
Trevor Lawrence is not exactly having the greatest year. So when I look at that, and then I think about teams taking chances, are they just going to ignore that, or they're still going to take chances? How does your top five in the draft go, and what are your thoughts about that tweet from PFF?
Yeah, I mean, my you know, on my board, it's after those top three QBs, the next one is, well, receivers. It's Harrison and then Neighbors for me on my board. My mock draft is a slightly different. Actually, it's not. Now that I'm looking at it, I have Caleb 1, Jaden Daniels 2. The third pick is interesting, but I went with McCarthy in my last mock draft for the Patriots slot there. Then I had Harrison Jr. and I'm a Vikings fan. And everyone who knows me knows that I want McCarthy to the Vikings, but maybe it's I was an emotional hedge. We'll see.
maybe so. The Patriots are, favored to take May. I like how you kind of went out there. But, you know, you see the congruence with the Michigan guy. Now he's not going to be the late Tom Brady pick. You know, he's going to be a first round spend, but you do see the Michigan guy.
And Brady absolutely loves him. And obviously the coaching staff as well, you know, not that that would inform anything, but that it does. There's been weird stuff going on with New England in this process. You hear different things vis-a-vis their intentions as far as that goes, or their how invested are they in the idea of trading down? Would it just be, you know, you have to give them the total bag where it's like a no brainer for them, or are they actually good faith interested in doing something that is within the realm of fairness on either side? But I had the Cardinals taking Marvin Harrison Jr. And then I had the Vikings consummating the trade up with the Chargers to get Drake May in the 5 slot. And then reuniting him with Josh McCown, the quarterback coach for the Vikings who coached Drake May in high school. As far as the quarterback class a couple years ago, and then the high bust rate goes with the territory at this position, right? Like, it's the other positions, you will be safer taking a player from those positions. Like, I would be stunned if Marvin Harrison Jr. busts. I would be stunned if Malik Nabers busts. Joe Alt is not going to bust. But the thing is these teams that need the quarterback, they're not going to make a Super Bowl until they find a solution at that position. And not only that, getting a star at that position on a rookie contract, this is also just by the data, is the most reliable cheat code that we know of in roster construction to being a menace in the playoffs, because it's how you get the most extra ROI on that. So it's you have to use those bullets in the draft equity on that position on the chance that you get that bonanza, where now all of a sudden you have that cheat code against the rest of the NFL. Now, in so doing, you also have to shoulder that risk on the other end of it, where there is that much higher bust rate. The teams who are taking those four quarterbacks in the top 5-6 this year are obviously hoping that there is a higher success rate with the guys at the top of this board than there was that season. And I think there's things to suggest that they are, or that there will be. I was pretty low on Mac in that class. Because he was just like a shuttle off guy in the pocket to those awesome receivers that they had on this sort of colossus of a team. I think I had him as like a, maybe fairly, like in the teens, late teens somewhere. I think I had him on my board. I hated Zach Wilson. I don't know if I have ever argued against a prospect or argued with people during the spring like I did against Zach Wilson. I was high on both Fields and Lance. Lance was just the shoot the moon, and I saw what Shanahan was doing. Obviously, it didn't work out, but they knew they were taking a risk. That's what you have to do with this position sometimes. Obviously, it didn't work out with that one. And then Fields, I wonder how much of that was Fields, how much of that was landing spot. And that's one thing I think that sometimes fans don't consider enough when it comes to player success, coming out of the rookie contract and in some of these different situations, is some of it is dependent on situation. A great example, I forgot if we hit on this earlier, but for me in this quarterback class, the big one with that at the top, it's Drake May. If Drake May gets taken by, let's just say, New England, right, at number 3, and then New England, this team that has a terrible supporting cast and they have this new coaching staff, then they use the number 3 pick on Drake May and they want to toss him out early on behind, this mediocre offensive line, and they have no the receiving core is an absolute travesty. I don't think it's going to go well for Drake May. I like the tools with Drake May, absolutely. He's got a big league arm. He has certainly gumption. He's a tough kid, everything like that. And the ceiling is absolutely there. But there's weeds in his game right now that just need to be pulled out with some care. And Drake May, the best situation for him is to go into a situation where there can be some patience exercised early on, where we can have some late night sessions with a bowl of popcorn with the guy who will put that investment into him, of like going in slow-mo through some of these different plays, you know, perhaps from this past season at UNC, and be like, Drake, here's several examples of where we saw you speed up both your decision-making process and your mechanical process when you began to get under duress. And here was the manifestation of it. Our theory is that you don't have in those situations that you hadn't been given a backup plan, or you know, and that's why you were sort of just speeding it through. And you know, we saw some of these YOLO decisions. We want to walk through what you should keep in mind in those situations, because you have all the ability that God could give one person at this position. So there's, if you have that plan in that moment, retain the mechanics, or just simply slide out the back door, just denote it a beat earlier, slide out the back, throw the ball away. All you had to do is get
absolutely
the way outside that has, throw the ball away.
The problem is, I think on the Patriots, he will be throwing the wolves, because this team's going to suck no matter if they pick J.J. McCarthy or Drake May. And I think
for sure
that could be a confidence killer for your quarterback.
The Vikings situation, though, for May is where his career goes the other way.
Well, here's the thing. Vikings are the most ready to win with a new quarterback. And I think that for your happiness, they are going to draft J.J. McCarthy. I don't think it's going to be a trade-up, though. And to be honest with you, I'm looking at just all the failures that happened, especially last year. I mean, you look at the top four quarterbacks in 2021, you're right about taking shots, but you're taking a shot after the 1-2 guy left. You're not taking a shot at the consensus 1-2 guy. Now, if JJ's your guy, JJ's your guy. But at the same time, are you going to take that risk and give up even more draft capital, especially if you're the Vikings, when you don't really have a second-round pick, right, in those situations? Truth is, I think it goes to May, but I also think that the Vikings stay at 11 and get J.J. McCarthy. I think it's a perfect shot, and I don't think they need to move up. You know, I mean, that's my opinion. Could be completely wrong here, but I thought there was a – I think that McCarthy, according to all the craziness you see from these teams – you know, Atlanta saying they want a quarterback to try to get their defensive guy. You know, there's a lot of BS being thrown out there. I think that he's almost like the Will Levis in the draft, not from a skill position, but from a smokescreen position. I think that he does go at number 11, or maybe they move up to number 8 or something like that. So I bet over 5.5 at plus 165. It's like plus 120 now that McCarthy's a little bit more of a smokescreen, but he still goes to a number 11 in the first round. So that's my opinion. So that'd be great for you as a Vikings fan if you can get your guy, man. I'm hoping for you there, Thor. But moving on, there's a lot to talk about. How about defensive players? How many defensive players do you go in the? Do you have yourself in your mocks going into the first round? Because there's a prop on that one as well.
Yeah, that prop. It's funny. I hit that one the day it came out, and then the number had moved. What is it live? Do you
have you seen a live number? I will pull it up right now.
And as you're doing that, I'm going to count the amount that I had in the mock draft that went up live today on Fantasy Pros. My last one of the process, because I actually don't know how many I had my last one, but I will count it right now.
I'm looking it up too as you talk here. It's hard to find this stuff. It's like draft specials, O-line props, you know.
Well, okay. So again, and this wasn't planned. This is just, you know, the mock draft that went up. I have 12 defenders going in the first round, which I think is right on the line of where that number is.
I have 12 in my mock draft too. I have 20 offensive players and 12 defense. So we align perfectly on that one, Thor.
Yeah, it's the number before I forgot. I would have to pull up my tickets.
10.5 is what I saw last at DraftKings, and I hit it. I hit the over.
Number for sure.
Yeah, and I think
because it was higher before.
Yes, it was definitely higher, but more and more mocks came out and more noise from the marketplace. I laid minus 155, don't get me wrong, but I have 12, and I think that there's value if I'm a guy and a half off, especially when some of these wide receivers are dropping out of favor in some of these issues. And the truth is, I don't know how many quarterbacks are going to happen. I have 6 in the first round. Even with 6 quarterbacks in the first round, I still have 12 defenders.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. And I think, you know, like at the end of the round there was a couple of defenders even that had a shot to sneak
it's 10
in.
And a half minus 175 live. So I have a little value. I have 20 cents of value on that.
Yeah. Like I'd be interested what the juice is at the 11.5 cause, you know, getting, I mean, I wonder if it even be over a little bit over the plus 100, whatever, but that's where I do think it's going to be like if gun to my head, I would go the 12 because, you know, even the last, so the 12th one off the board for me in that exercise was off the board at 29. the last three dudes of mine were all offensive guys. But like I said, I probably would have been maybe a slightly closer to 13 than I would have been to 11. So that's sort of where I'm at with it. But you know, that's sort of where we're talking about with it.
Okay. Hey, well, how many quarterbacks do you have in the first round?
Four. I got four. Teams make mistakes in the first round every year. So we'll see. I think the one that could be, you could make an argument for would be Michael Penix at the very end of the round. I think anything with Bo Nix in the first round, my opinion, would be egregious. I would be surprised if we see that. But I'm still riding with the under 4.5.
Well, I think Denver's going to be egregious, and I'm going to make a case for it when I get to that, when I get to them. But either way, that I have six, so you have four. But I think they both sneak in. How many receivers do you have in the first round? I have six myself.
Let me see. I think the last one I might have been at six. I was at six. So the last pick I struggle with, and it's funny, you know, Kansas City at the 32nd slot. I went on Kansas City Sports Talk the end of last week, and the way that they set it up was so funny because it's like exactly every time I get to the Kansas City slot in these mock drafts, it was like the exact same. They're like, all right, Thor, for that 32nd slot, is it going to be the offensive lineman or is it going to be receiver? You know, it's like the same way that they're sort of talking about it there. But and I have been leaning a lot of the offensive linemen with them in that pick. But depending on the way that the board falls, I think, you know, if the offensive linemen are going above them, I think you could make an argument for a receiver, particularly if a guy like Xavier Worthy gets a 32. That's who I ended up giving to them. But yeah, that's sort of where I'm at with the math there at the end of the first round.
I actually think, you know, they lost Snead too. I thought that was a massive loss, and I wouldn't be shocked if there was a corner sitting there or something too, you know. The whole Rashee Rice issue made the whole sixth receiver for me, and I picked a Donnie Mitchell. But it wouldn't shock me if they go offensive line or a cornerback either.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly in play. And the thing with the Chiefs, they it's not like the one dude that you point to and you give flowers to every time, but the overall draft philosophy of that organization the last 4 or 5 years, it reminds me so much of what Ozzie Newsome used to do with the Ravens, where it wasn't like the ethos wasn't so much like, oh, he likes this kind of a dude or this, you know, you could predict it in advance because of this. The ethos was just, we'll sit back in the end of each round where we invariably pick, and we're just going to accept the gift that the NFL hands to us because there's always a dude that falls down.
Yeah.
And Ozzie Newsome's like, I'm not going in with any preconceived notions. I'm just going to accept the guy that should have gone 10 slots higher. And that's how they got all these steals from their slots. It's the same thing with the Chiefs. They don't zero in on anything. They will take the steals. Like a couple years ago when – I had Creed Humphrey, I think, as a top 25 prospect. I could not believe in the moment. I was like, are there pictures out there of Creed Humphrey? Is there like a thing with him of a bong? Like I was texting people like, why the hell is he still available? Like in the mid second round. And the Chiefs were just like, yeah, no problem. We'll take him. We got a home for you. Or Trey Smith kept falling over some, you know, concerns that proved to not be as, you know, pressing for his NFL thing or whatever. The Chiefs were like, yeah, no problem. We'll use the fifth round pick. So that's, to your point, yes, I think the mistake people are making with the Chiefs is getting myopic on this position or that position. They will take the BPA. That's just what they do.
Absolutely. And you know what? I think that's smart. And you have the luxury of Pat Mahomes and Travis Kelce together. You could do best guy available all the time, you know, basically. And what's funny about them, they'll just sit there and wait for a wide receiver on a team that is underperforming, that's complaining, and they'll trade him for a fourth rounder. They'll get him in the middle of the season. You know, it's almost a great philosophy to do that because Mahomes, he makes his receivers better. You know, it's not like receivers make him better. So it's a great problem to have when you're the Chiefs. So good call on that. How about offensive linemen? I have seven total offensive linemen, and the number's way up at 9.5, and the over's minus 200. I just don't see a way there's 10 or 11 offensive linemen in the first round of this draft. I think the position kind of is deep. I almost think the position being deep makes people want to wait a little bit more because they can still get a good guy in the number two or number three rounds. I took the under at plus 160, you know, because I have seven guys. I'm curious about your number.
This is fun because I, you know, I did the mock draft and it did just come out on Fantasy Pros, but I did not do the counting like of the different stuff in advance of this. So this is interesting to look and then compare them to some of the prop numbers. And this is another interesting one. I have 9. Okay. So we're right there at that number, but yeah, mine shaded under. And I suppose where it would have gone over is had I given an offensive lineman to the Chiefs at 32, but even to get to 9 to go the other way, it required me giving both the Ravens and the 49ers offensive linemen in the 30 and 31st slot. So that's how we got to 9.
Sure.
But yeah, I went another way with the Chiefs. But also, this goes into the math with that prop. Obviously, 10 is an incredibly elevated number. Once you get up there to the 8, the 9, the value, that's where it starts. Like, it's a stat class at the top, absolutely. But like once you get there, it's going to require one of two things. Either there's going to be more interior offensive linemen taken in the first round than people are anticipating. And I'm going beyond Barton and Jordan Morgan, who I'm going to toss into that bucket. I'm talking about this would require a bare to go over the number. Mm-hmm. Bare minimum, one of Jax Powers Johnson or Zach Frazier. At minimum, one of them needs to go in the first round, and maybe even two for that number to go over. The other one is that it's not just Guyton that has to go in the first round. You would need to get one of those other tackles, i.e. Whether it's Sua Matea or whether it is, I don't know if you could, it could be Patrick Paul. That probably the path to it would be Sua Matea and one, you know, the interior guy, you know, would.
The interior for sure. I would say interior.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, like, you're already pressing the margins there, right? Like, yeah. You have to toss in one of those extra dudes. Plus, Guyton for sure has to get in there. If it's not Guyton, you have to swap in Sua Matea for Guyton. That's where it starts to become a bridge too far for me at 10. It's just and I understand with this class being what it is, why they have to settle like that. To me, it's just a little bit too rich.
And plus, and it's plus money. So if your number is 9 and it's under 9.5 for plus money, you know, that shows the value that you have in that situation. If it was even, that you'd be a lot closer to not taking it. But I'm kind of the same with you. And I got the 7 just because I think that people are going to want to get some corners and some more defensive people. But hey, I'll take 9. That would be a winner for us over here on our side of the fence. But good stuff. Now, I listened to what you said about Atlanta yesterday. Why don't you tell our audience what you think Atlanta does at number 8?
Yeah, this goes into the first defender off the board thing, because the slots above Atlanta there at the top 7 ones are almost assuredly going to be offensive guys, barring an unexpected trade, right? I mean, like, the top 3 teams are taking quarterback. The 4th slot will be wide receiver, unless there's a trade there. The 5th slot will probably, you know, that is either quarterback if there's a trade or receiver offensive line. The same thing with the 6th slot. And then the 7th slot, Titans are surely going to take an offensive lineman there if they're there. So we start talking about the first defender off the board at 8. I've been surprised now ever since this prop opened, and I've disagreed with it, that Dallas Turner was seen by the sports books and by the market as the prohibitive favorite to be the first defender off the board against the entire field. That to me was going way too far, right? Like, with sports betting, they're prices, right? It's like, sure, the stock market. It's not like all these outcomes are unknowable in advance. So you're not betting the person necessarily or the outcome necessarily. You're betting the price of it, right? And to get to say that Dallas Turner against the entire field, that Turner was, you know, twice as like, or, you know, however you'd work that out, 1.5 times more likely than the rest of the field. I just disagreed with that on its face. I don't even see Dallas Turner as the best edge defender in this class. Beyond that, things I have heard from folks that know some thinking behind the Atlanta situation, what I've heard is that they are considering other defensive position cornerback, the guy across from AJ Terrell, maybe a bit more seriously than some of these mock drafters that we had, because it seemed like people were just like, oh yeah, Atlanta's up, so we'll just put in Dallas Turner, and there wasn't a ton of thought being done to it. That what I had heard is that Atlanta is considering that a bit more. And the other one, and also that I think Latu is in play just as much as Dallas Turner is with the team that would go Edge, and Edge is certainly in play with them, but cornerback as well. And by the way, the corner that I heard that they like is Quinion Mitchell, which probably is not a surprise to people out there.
Sure.
But the other one,
he visited the team. So yeah,
he was. Yeah, exactly. And then the you know when you see a horse race and then there's like at the very end down the home, there's the horse that comes from out of nowhere and just blows by everyone. That's getting some vibes like that with Mr. Byron Murphy. Byron just keeps coming and coming and coming. You know, like it's, you know, every time you look up, it's like he has gotten closer and closer to the front. We got 48 hours left. Byron is closing strong. So and the thing that Byron's got going for him, in addition to what was a very strong tape and the athletic profile, is the interior, you know, the three-dimensional chess of it. The interior defensive line class, I think, falls off a bit quicker with the tiers when you're looking at that than some of these other analogous positions, whether it's edge, whether it is cornerback that these guys that we're talking about comparing them against. That might be the tiebreaker that pushes him over the top against some of these other dudes. So I think Byron probably ends up going a little bit higher than people think. I'm not saying that Byron's going to go first, but I some of these long shot guys for first defender off the board, I think, deserve a longer look. And let's just say that my draft betting portfolio, I have some tickets that are in that vein as well.
I think you scare me because I have Byron Murphy as the best defender in the draft personally. I didn't think that he's going to go first, but I mean, I watched him play for Texas. I've watched him run down running backs. You know, I mean, absolute beast. And he's and that's what you need to do is clog up that interior. And so that's scary to me. But I was one of the people maybe in the beginning in the market that took Dallas Turner at plus 300 to be picked in the eighth position, you know, from the Atlanta Falcons. But I heard your case and I decided to hedge a little bit. I took that Latu Latu from UCLA, who I have as the best edge defender goes, is the first edge drafted. And I got him at plus 250. So I put the same amount. And I put a smaller amount on Quinion Mitchell at 12-1 as the first defender coming off. So there's a couple ways I could be in this position. Now, hopefully, Joe Alt goes to the Chargers and then the seventh pick trades back, and then, you know, all of a sudden Latu gets picked seventh, and then my perfect situation would be Dallas Turner gets picked eighth anyway, win both bets, right? Or Donnie Mitchell is seventh or whatever. But there's a couple different ways I can win on this, because if any of those three come in, it's a profit for me. But if a guy like you just scared me with and Mitchell comes through as number one, he'll bust that all up, especially if it's at number eight. So that's what does scare me a little bit about your logic there, and I think you are correct. So I definitely took what you said seriously. I think that the plus 300 I told people not to take a bad number on that, makes a ton of sense. So that's the situation I'm in. But I think it gets more and more interesting with the Jets here at number 10. I'm hearing Brock Bowers and I'm offensive line. What do you think the Jets do at number 10?
So the thing that the guy that I know that they're super duper interested in is Roma Dunze. Could Roma Dunze get to 10? I think that's the first thing to consider with the Jets. Or will the Jets have access to a short trade up to get Roma Dunze, right? Like, be it the Falcon slot, be it the Bears slot. One other thing vis-a-vis this, because I think people out there might be like, there's absolutely no chance of this. I think it's slightly better chance than people think. I actually had Roma Dunze going to the Jets at 10 in my last mock. It may be a bit of a hedge because I do think the Jets could trade up, again to get Roma Dunze. But I think the Chicago Bears at 9 are considering other positions a bit more than maybe the general public is thinking. And just if Rome gets to 9 in some of these different mocks, Chicago has done a lot to help out the receiving core, obviously, in the last couple of seasons. DJ Moore, the pick of Scott to a far lesser extent, and then this offseason, of course, the big one being Keenan Allen. When you will have picked Caleb at the top, there is defensive positions that badly need immediate help, and the offensive line as well could use a little bit more immediate help. The guy that I ended up giving Chicago to at 9 was Latu, but this could facilitate.
Oh, I hope you're right. I want Latu.
Yeah. And you could also, this sets up for, remember last year when Jalen Carter falls down the board a little bit,
yes,
and Chicago was sitting dead red on Darnell Wright.
They thought Seattle would take him, and Seattle instead goes Weatherspoon.
Exactly. And so, you know, it, and then the Eagles, they just want to make sure they box out people from behind. So they call Chicago. Hey, Chicago, you interested in paying Darnell, the guy that you're going to take anyway, a little bit less money on the rookie scale? And for your trouble, we'll kick in a fourth round pick for free, sure, next year. Mm-hmm. You're getting the guy you want anyway. Yeah. That could very well set up to be the same thing here where Rome Odunze is there. The Jets are like, hey, you want to do the same thing you did last year? And we can have Rome and you can have the guy you're going to take anyway, one spot later. Mm-hmm. So that is the first thing to keep in mind. You know, we'll see if Rome gets past Falcons and the Bears, however that ends up looking. If not, I think that is where Bowers is very, very, very much in play for the Jets. I think he fits an enormous need for the Jets and a guy that Rodgers would have so much fun with. Don't think of Brock Bowers like a tight end. Think of him as a guy you manufacture the ball to, and he's a ball advancer guy.
Dalton Kincaid-ish, kind of like Dalton Kincaid a little bit for the Bills, but maybe better. Like, maybe better.
More fleshed out more versatile in terms of like Kirby. So this is one thing that speaks to it. Kirby Smart said that if they had shifted Brock Bowers into the backfield as a running back, he would have been the best running back on Georgia's roster. I don't think people realize the breadth of how dominant Brock Bowers was in college. Just a brief encapsulation of that. Brock Bowers was only in Athens for 3 years. All 3 years, he led that team in receiving. So from a true freshman season on, those three teams, two of them were national champions the first 2 years. Last year, they would have had a shot at the three-peat, but they lost that narrow game in the SEC title game to Alabama. So these are three dominant colossus teams in the middle of a dynasty that Brock Bowers was the guy on their offense as far as the skill guys. And it's not like they had a bum receiving core. You know, it was Ladd McConkey, A.D. Mitchell, George Pickens. And then they had guys that were further down, you know, as far as Kyrus Jackson, Marcus Rosemi, Jack Saints.
Does Nathaniel Hackett really factor in his tight ends as much? You know, I don't know about that.
Nathaniel Hackett's a dope, but Aaron Rodgers is like in the end game, is at the very end. This is going to be an Aaron Rodgers production next season. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Brock Bowers will be. Like I said, I think Rome Odunze is the guy they prioritize.
But it's funny, but they got Mike Williams, you know, and they got Carter. I think that the GM for the Jets would look absolutely incompetent if Rodgers even gets injured for two games, if you're not focused on that offensive line. Now, I know they did some in free agency, but still, you pick Brock Bowers, a guy that doesn't so much pass block that much. Maybe I'm wrong. I didn't think he did. I know the focus in Georgia's offense was he had him extremely involved with his snap counts and everything. But it almost just seems to me that the Jets would be save your job a little bit. You can at least try to protect Aaron Rodgers type thing. And that's I guess I could be wrong too, but that was the whole reason why I had the Jets going with Troy Fontanu from Washington. I know Brock Bowers would be the flashy pick, and God, the Jets go with Odunze and just keep ignoring the offensive line. It really worries me, Thor.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. I do think that is in consideration. But I think with the short-term things they did, well, you can have grave concerns about the long-term prognosis of that offensive line. I think what they did at least are the short-term patchwork fixes. Now, do they have the depth? If they had an injury, would you be confident? That is something to consider, you know, be it as a – you know, if they did not use this pick for an offensive lineman, be that another signing, be that a trade for a team desperate to get somebody out, be that a pick maybe day two, whatnot. But at least for this coming season, you know, whatever, that's a position they're going to have to focus on a lot. But I guess that the only slight way that I might see the situation just a little bit better is just I think all the eggs are in this. You know, it was like Tampa Bay at the end, you know, when they were drafting, where it's like outside of the weird Kyle Trask pick, which they just took a blowtorch to the second that they made it. But like they were delineating the picks to help out Brady in that the end of that run, obviously the end of his career. with Rodgers and New York, I think it's the same thing. And you have they have the two good weapons right now for the receiving core, the pass catchers, but both the starting slot guy, the third receiver, however you want to look at that, and then also the tight end position are things that are sort of screaming out for an upgrade right now. And these are two ways that you could do that.
All right. Well, that fair points. Absolutely. And I obviously have the offensive line, but, you know, we'll see what the Jets do. I can only think, you know, to myself, what's going to be better for the GM's job or the team. I've been so wrong on receivers. I've been betting unders on receivers because I don't think they move the needle for years and getting my ass kicked. So you never know what's going to happen here with the Jets. But I'm going to give you my Denver Broncos conspiracy theory here, all right? So here it is. And I did take Denver, thank God, to pick a quarterback first at plus 190. I think that number has tanked down to minus 130 because they think they're going to trade out of the position, you know, and get a quarterback way later in the draft, you know. So that would work out pretty well for me. But I think that they do grab their guy. And maybe I think it would be Bo Nix. I don't know. Maybe it's a different quarterback. But the way I look at it is, I mean, Denver, when they made the weird trade with the Jets, but, you know, they're only paying him half his salary. It's really a no-risk trade for them. Zach Wilson's from Denver, blah, blah, blah. That made me kind of pull back a little bit. But, like, seriously, look at your quarterback room, Sean Payton. This is Sean Payton's second year, you know. I think they're keen on somebody. And the worst thing that can happen is let the Raiders have a shot at the guy that they're thinking of. So I would expect paranoia to break in there a little bit. You really think that Nix will go to the second round? You better be sure about it, because if the Raiders snag him from you, it's going to make you look or feel stupid for a while. I think they do grab a Bo Nix or a quarterback at that position instead of wait, because this is a loaded quarterback draft from what we see anyway. We'll see how what happens with time. But yeah, Denver's first drafted player is actually close to what I picked. Sorry, it's plus 175. I got plus 185, but I could see them picking a quarterback just to stop them. And does Sean Payton want the Saints to get their guy too, his ex-team? I know Derek Carr is there, but they're going to try to develop someone maybe. So what do you think about that?
I certainly they're in about as desperate a situation as you can be in, as far as both that position and then the lack of resources to adequately address it. If you want to give any help to that guy going forward, right? Like they don't have the cap room. And then if you're going to go YOLO on a trade offer to try to go up and get one of those top four guys, the only way to do it is to leverage, basically blow up your next two drafts would be the only way you could project that they could potentially beat an offer from the Vikings, right? The only thing, like, the scenario to get the fourth one, it's, I think it's possible, but they need several factors to go their way. I think the scenario that would open up the potential possibility is if the Vikings trade is with the Patriots. Because then it crosses the Patriots out as the, you know, team that's now, of course, the Patriots are still ahead of you at 11.
They're still ahead, yeah.
Yes, but so that's factor one. So now the three quarterbacks go at the top. I don't think the Broncos, the equity to get to number four, I don't think that Jim Harbaugh will trade with them at number five. Certainly if it's his son, J.J. McCarthy, I don't think he's sending to his bitter rival and division rival, the Denver Broncos. Now, the second factor they need is for the Giants to pass on QB4. I think if those two things happen in conjunction, now the seventh, now you're within the range where you absolutely can make a trade up with the amount of equity that you have. Then the only factor would be, can you beat the Patriots for that trade up? Now, people would be like, well, the Patriots have more equity and they have the first round pick back there. But if the Patriots have already made the decision to move back, it's ostensibly under the theory of, we have the new coaching staff and we have the new front office. And we have decided that instead of putting a lot of our eggs in the one prospect basket with the equity that we want to try to build up the roster, maybe they've already looked into the next quarterback class as well. And let's try to build up the infrastructure of the team first. It's possible that they have, in that scenario, that they have made the decision of that they're going to go a different direction. Maybe they like one of those other guys and they're like, we'll just take one of them early day two. That would be the scenario where I think Denver could get the QB4. But, you know, outside of that, yes, they need to address it somehow. If it's not, they got to take Penix or Nix at some point because they can't go into next season starting Stidham and Wilson. I would just advocate it at that point. If they're not able to move up a little bit to do that, if that possibility is not open up for them, go the opposite way, trade to near the end of the first round or back, you know, whatever, pick up extra picks because you desperately need them. Your roster is crying out for help. You need cheap roster cogs, if nothing else, just fill the thing out because you don't have cap room. Do that. And then pick the guy at a more acceptable price.
Yeah, if you obviously if they get past the teams, you don't want them to grab your guy at. Absolutely. And so that's the big question here. But I think that's kind of fun to think about a little bit what Denver's going to do. It's been a big talk about the draft. So I'm going to give you one more after I ask you what are some of the plays and the long shots that you've liked in the draft and maybe anything that's still good at a current number that you're sitting on.
Oh, sorry.
So I'm going to give you a super long shot at the end of this. But before, I want to ask you some of the wonderful draft plays that you've made that maybe you have some value on. And absolutely, if you can't get the number no more, that's great. I want to hear about it. Or some plays that you might like at the current number.
I'm trying to. So because I've been, you know, with the job finishing off the rankings and then the car wash at the spot. I don't have the ticker up with the, you know, with the odds. So I got to pull it up really quick as far as the, you know, the draft is as far, because obviously the odds with this stuff, it changes like every second. So I want to give up.
Oh, it absolutely does. But if you want to start with some plays you made, more power to you too.
Yeah. I mean, like one of them that I know that I like currently was the, and I hope that the odds haven't changed enough on me to negate this, but the McConkey before his prop was 34.5, 35.5. I go under on that. I do think McConkey slips into the end of the first. That's one. I was over on the 80 Mitchell one. Now that one got bet up. I don't know what it's currently sitting at, but it started at 16.5, like 48 hours later, 72 hours later. It was all the way up to, 27.5, 28.5. I still go over on that. I'm fading Mitchell in the first round.
It's minus 190. Minus 190 over 27.5. So it's going in your favor.
Okay. Yeah. So that one I'm still up. Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking at the current. So these ones are on DK currently. Okay. So I'll just go down the board. I'm over on Nick's 32.5. Brian Thomas at 19.5. That one's probably fair. That's a fair price. Murphy, I would probably shade that one under the 14.5. But with the negative view, the minus 150, it's probably actually a fair price. Let's see. The Dallas Turner at 9.5. I'm definitely going over that. Graham Barton at 21.5. I would. My inclination would be under, but I just looked at the juice minus 230. That makes it tough there. I'm under on the JJ slot at 5.5. I'm over on Jax Parrish Johnson at 31.5. And that one you can get at plus 120. I actually like JPJ. I think he's 31 or 30 on my board. But I don't, we were talking about the offensive lineman thing before. I don't, some of the things I'm hearing, I think he's more of a early Friday guy. Even though myself, I might take them late first. Let's see the other ones. I go under on, I was going to say I go under on Alt at 7.5, but that's minus 360. That's minus three. Like I'm not, I don't really buy tickets that high. So that's kind of stupid. That one, that should be a different slot probably. Let's see. I'm just looking. Oh, okay. One that I for sure like is Lot 2, 16.5 under that number.
Okay.
I go over. Yeah, I definitely like that because he's in play to be potentially a top 10 pick or the first edge off the board. The only way that thing goes over is if his nightmare or if his medicals were an absolute nightmare. But I think that something about that would have gotten out by this point if that was the case. His game absolutely justifies just by his game, his film, and the athletic testing profile with that. He's a top 10 pick all day. The last 2 years is a pass rusher. People look up his film, look up his pressure rate, look up his sack rate. It's absolutely stupid the last 2 years. And in addition to the athletic profile, the deep reservoir of pass rushing moves, which is, it's just like a jukebox. It's like you shut down one. It's like, all right, next one, next one, next one, next. It's like me with the iTunes when, you know, when you're writing and then you don't like the song, you're just hitting next, 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 next. That's like him with the pass rushing moves. You shut one down. He's got the, he goes in the next one real quick. I go under with Quinyon. Wow. Quinyon under 13 and a half. You get plus 185. Might be the, my favorite one currently on the, that I've seen at these current odds. So I go under on that one.
Yeah, that's a that's a hell of a deal, I think.
That's crazy. That is surprising.
Yeah, because both you and I kind of agree that he's the best corner in this draft. I would think so. And then what sucks is I actually have Murphy going later at number where do I have him? I think I have him at like a 16 to Seattle, but I think he deserves to go earlier. And I think Quinyon could be picked earlier too. So that's interesting. Did you say 14 and a half was his number?
Let's see. 13 and a half.
Quinyon Mitchell. Okay.
But it's at plus 185 to go under. Okay. I mean, I'm down with that. The last one I would do is another solid plus money proposition I'm seeing is Tyler Guyton at 28 and a half. I go over on that for plus 180. I see the flashes for sure with Guyton. I think you take him above that. It's a little bit hope and a prayer for me because he's so dang inconsistent. He needs some work for sure, and he needs to start giving effort on every play. It's a twofold thing with him. So coaching to work on the technique, but then also you need buy-in from the kid. That's the two things where then the game elevates up. But, yeah, I mean – you see it both ways with Guyton.
The Ravens are people kind of mocking.
Could see that too. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a one where he could go in and you hammer that kind of stuff down. But yeah, you need patience with him early on. That's another one like that. But that price seems pretty good to me.
All right, fair enough. Well, that's great stuff. Thank you for that. And I wrote some of those down. Here's my super long shot before we go. And it's got to obviously work like this, but it's 100 to 1. So like literally pizza money, whatever you think. But you know, like, you know, I have, JJ going 11th to the Vikings. I have Bo Nix or whoever quarterback going 12 to Denver. So I'm looking at the Raiders here. They already drafted Michael Mayer last year. I think they do go quarterback and they fool us and they get Penix. So that's why I have 6 quarterbacks in this draft, is just based upon Denver and the Raiders. I think the Raiders panic once they see Denver pick a quarterback and then they're there. Now you have the Saints here. The Saints need a lot. They are stuck with Carr contract wise. They are probably going to have to try to find an excuse to protect him. So they go with Fashanu from Penn State. I think that's where they grabbed him. The Colts, I think, grab cornerback. They've been drafting tight ends. I think you see where I'm going here, Thor. They've been drafting tight ends already the last few drafts, you know, and they've been wasting some pretty high picks on tight ends. And then you have Seattle, who has a tight end, and that's where I think Byron Murphy goes, according to my mock. And last year, you know, they went with Weatherspoon. So now, being the second worst team against the run last year, they're probably going to go with DT, I would say. And this is where the Jaguars, I think, could really land a guy like Brock Bowers. I think that you'll look at Evan Ingram there. I mean, the guy's been injury prone his whole career. He's paid a lot of money to play for Jacksonville. And wouldn't it make sense to draft a Georgia guy? When you're so close to Georgia in Jacksonville, you watch this guy constantly play. It's 100 to 1 on FanDuel that Brock Bowers, or no, even Jacksonville goes tight end. Now, it would be Brock Bowers. Maybe they trade out and get someone else. That'd be great. If they didn't want a first-round pick, I think they will want a first-round pick. But, I mean, this is 100 to 1. And if Brock Bowers does not go to the Jets, I just see a small scenario of him falling to Jacksonville and them deciding to improve their pass catchers over there, especially now that Kevin Ridley's gone. They did sign Gabe Davis and Devin Duvernay. So I'm going to take a shot at it, my friend Thor, and that would make my draft for me if I could hit that.
That's interesting. I haven't heard that that idea or theory, but it is interesting. There's how do you say it? More than one way to skin a cat. And obviously the Jaguars a lot of pass rushing quality left, or I'm sorry, pass receiving, pass catching quality left their building this offseason. But you bring in Davis and, you know, the, I guess the thought being that they have Ingram, like you were mentioning, but Bauer is, like I was mentioning before, don't think of him as a tight end. It's not instructive. He's just the, you literally can put him anywhere and you just manufacture the ball to him and then he will advance it forward. That's the thing that he does. So you could play Bowers with any tight end in the NFL. That's so like, you know, even though Ingram, like even people might be like, oh, his skill set's superfluous with Ingram's. Well, no more than someone who's good at advancing the ball forward's skill set is superfluous to someone else whose skill set is superfluous to someone who's good at advancing the ball forward, right? Like Ingram stretches the seam for you and can do some of the big slot different stuff. Bowers just get the ball to him short, I mean, however you want. I mean, put him out wide, put him in the slot, put him in line maybe just a little bit, but, you know, backfield. He at least gives effort as a blocker, I would give for Brock Bowers, but you're obviously will never – If you asked him to pass block even one time, you would be not sending him out on a route, which would be a jailable offense. So, that is one sort of outside the box way to go about fortifying that receiving core. And what it would give is like sort of a mix and match thing, where then you have some different, like you know, when you do the 12 personnel, where you'd have the Bowers and Ingram, you'd be doing a lot more of that, and then you would be mixing and matching the two other receivers, and then you know going into the three wide receiver sets, I think you know you could just use Bowers as one of those in the slot. So it's very interesting. Yeah, I mean, like at a if that was like 4-5 to 1, it wouldn't have my interest, because the Jaguars, they do have this acute need in the secondary, and I really, you know, that's where I would think that they could earmark. But let's say that the top two guys are off the board, they're a corner, and maybe even in a scenario where three have gone off the board, and then they're sitting there, and all of a sudden, a guy they didn't think was would be available then filters down the board because of this, because, you know, because the Colts are taking the cornerback above them, and then, you know, let's say the Falcons start off this dance, and then one of the other ones gets popped right around there, and all of a sudden, the Jaguars are like, well, what the hell? We wanted to take a cornerback, but we don't. Nate Wiggins is super duper skinny. We don't love that in this slot. And Kool-Aid was a bit inconsistent. We don't think he's worth it. But this dude that we didn't think would be here is here. 100-1. I can co-sign that.
100-1 over a tight end. What the hell? Hopefully that happens. I think T. Kubler said, "What was the odds of Malik Willis going number one in 2022 draft?" I think he's ripping on me a little bit because I think I made that play early and realized that there was no chance it was going to happen. It looks like that draft class from 2022 was ended up pretty bad. Obviously, with Kenny Pickett getting traded already,
he's probably ripping on me because Malik was a guy in that terrible quarterback class and that down draft class as a whole that was like the one quarterback I was, you know, bullish on. I will say, you know, that's people that
fingers.
Don't like me sort of harp on that one. Kenny Pickett was a first round pick. I had him basically the same slot on my board as Bo Nix. So I, you know, it looks like I got that one right. But yeah, I definitely missed on Malik.
I mean, everyone missed on these quarterbacks, man. It's not. I mean, I thought Malik had some promise there. I watched him play there at Liberty, but you know, he was just more of a system kind of guy and college system, and just really did not transfer. But at the same time, a lot of times you have to be in great situations. You know, it's not like the Tennessee Titans had all-time great offensive coordinators helping out that team or anything. He was as bad of a hand as they've gotten. It seems like he's gotten a pretty bad hand themselves, and that's what people remember. But what's not a bad hand is bringing guys like you on this show, Thor. I really appreciate you discussing the draft, going over all your numbers, some of the bets you like, some just great stuff. Where can our listeners and viewers get your wonderful information in place?
Appreciate you, man. It was awesome talking to you. You can find me on X at ThorKU and find my 500 player big board with 500 comps at fantasypros.com/Thor500. And then we're doing at Fantasy Pros on the YouTube channel. We will be live for round one on Thursday. I think our show begins an hour before the draft starts that night, 6 p.m. Central off the top of my head. And that's, you know, Joe Pisapia, colleagues, Derek Brown, Andrew Erickson, Pat Fitzmaurice, myself, we'll be with you the entire night. And then, of course, the next day on day two, going through rounds two and three. So very excited about that. Check that out on the Fantasy Pros YouTube channel.
Oh, make sure you check that out. Yep, it was a blast having you on. Best of luck this week during your draft, Thor.
My man, appreciate you.
All right, my friends, a huge thanks to Thor. Hope you enjoyed this draft show. We're going to have one more NFL draft show tomorrow with Ron from Ron A. Sports to get his perspective on how the draft is going to play out from his predictions. If you have any questions for us, feel free to tweet us at The Oddsbreakers. Email us at info@theoddsbreakers.com. Have a great rest of your week, and go get some winners.